Hey, hello everybody, and I'd like to welcome you all to the first edition of the Cemetery Podcast. I am your host, Ken Negley from the Necro Tourist, and I think we got a lot of exciting things coming up today. We are going to be discussing one of Ohio's Garden Park cemeteries. We are going to be discussing one of the famous necrotourism graves of all time. We are going to be visiting a Native American mound. We are going to visit an impressive cemetery monument. We are going to be discussing cemetery symbols. We are also going to be giving cemetery tips, and we are going to be telling you one of the scariest stories in the history of cemetery photography. Stick around, this is the Cemetery Podcast.
For more photos and information to accompany this broadcast, go to thenecrotourist.com or thefuneralsource.org/cemetery-podcast.
All right, I want to open up this segment talking about a cemetery I visited almost a year ago, and it is located in Springfield, Ohio. We were there on the day of the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact. I was there with Wendy Everett from the Graveyard Gals. We headed into Springfield and a few other areas in Clark County, but we headed to the Ferncliff Cemetery and Arboretum. For those of you who have not been there, it's definitely one of those ones that needs to be checked out. Now, one of the coolest things about it is as you're entering into the cemetery, it's adjacent to a park which coincides with the creek that runs along the entrance to the cemetery. And it has a huge rock face area, which I'm sure is the reason why it's called Ferncliff. But it's very interesting on the entrance. Again, as I mentioned to you, Ferncliff is located in Springfield, Ohio. It has approximately about 150,000 burials. It was established in 1863 with only 70 acres, but it is now expanded to 240 acres. Some of the features that are there is the pet cemetery and crematory. They also have the soldier circle, which was pretty cool. There is 208 Civil War soldiers there, and all those guys had to be the equivalent of honorably discharged, which was called the Diploma of Patriotism. Also in that area, there is four cannons around, and there is a 9-foot statue that was done by Henry Lowe, but oddly enough, it's based on one of the Baileys of Barnum and Bailey fame. So, interesting fact about that statue next time you pay a visit. One of the things that I found a little interesting about it was when you get down to the lake in the front near some of the bigger mausoleums, you see a plaque which is dedicated to the people who designed the cemetery itself, and they are students of Adolf Strauch, which is the guy that helped lay out the way Spring Grove and several of the other Garden Park cemeteries around the Midwest. You know, there's quite a few famous burials there. One of the ones we went there for was the pro boxer, Davy Moore. He was known back in the day as the Springfield Rifle. There's actually a song called Who Killed Davy Moore, written by Bob Dylan. Check it out. Also, Johnny Little, who was a jazz vibraphonist, he's buried there. Also, Bradley Kincaid, who was a folk singer and radio personality from the area. Also, one of my personal favorites was Brooks the Bull Lawrence, who was a pitcher for our hometown Cincinnati Reds during the late 50s and early 60s. He pitched for 7 seasons, and he is a member of the Reds Hall of Fame. Also, you'll find Patty Parks there, who was a Jonestown murder victim. James Schlesinger, yes, you political junkies, it's that James Schlesinger, the one who was the U.S. Secretary of Defense who served under Nixon and Ford. But the biggest gun and one of the biggest reasons we went to that cemetery was for Ohio's 40th governor, Asa Bushnell. He is also the founder of International Harvester. But if you go to visit, you cannot miss his mausoleum. It is open-aired, huge, white. You can look through all of the burial stones are laid out of all the family members. It literally looks like a little outdoor building rather than it does an actual mausoleum. You know, if you do go there, you are able to visit their online grave search if you're looking for people. They also have maps of the cemetery online. And I am going to suggest that if you are in and around the central Ohio area, that you definitely need to make a pit stop at the Ferncliff Cemetery. You will be glad you did. Hey, here's a travel tip from us at the NecroTourist. I don't know if you're like us, but we drink a lot of coffee. And you know when you check into a hotel room, they usually have those little mini coffee makers where they give you 2 pouches of regular coffee and 2 pouches of decaf. Well, be sure when you check in at the hotel that you ask them for extra ones at the counter. Then, if you happen to leave, to go out to dinner, whatever, and you stop back at the counter, ask them for a few more. Hopefully you have 6 to 7, 8. Then you are able to make multiple cups of coffee, and in the event that you don't use them all, you can always put them in a Ziploc baggie and bring them with you, so the next time you visit a hotel, you'll actually have extra ones ahead of the game. But be sure you always ask when checking in. That's a tip from the NecroTourist. Hello, boys and girls, and today's cemetery symbolism is the lily. Lilies have been around and are associated with the beginning of time and are also associated with the divinity, and they are abundant in funerary arts, and they stand for innocence and purity. Yes, lilies were connected with funerals in ancient Rome and in Egypt, and each type of lily has a slightly different meaning, like the Easter lily being associated with resurrection and innocence of the soul, the calla lily being associated with marriage and fidelity, as well as its majestic beauty, and the lily of the valley, innocence, humility, and renewal, also called the steps to heaven. And they were used widely till the end of the Victorian era for their fragrance, which they had their magic ability to cover up the smells of the dead. The water lily represented purity and sanctity in the East. Now, the cup or the calyx of the lily can represent spiritual vessel from which the divine is born. Resurrection plus renewal as it emerges in the spring. It's highly regenerative. And lilies can rebound from fire and drought, which is why they have that association. The lily has been described as being eternal and incorruptible. It represents purity, immortality, virginity, and majesty. Hey, would you like your cemetery conservation done with respect and honor? Then contact our friends at Moscow Cemetery Monument Repair. With 23 years of practicing conservation, Robert Moscow is a third-generation historical mason. He also holds a master's degree in historical preservation and has conserved more than 89 cemeteries and worked on more than 8,000 gravestones and monuments. He does practice a do-no-harm method, and all of the work is documented and photographed. You can check them out at cemeteryrepair.com. Again, that's Moscow Cemetery Monument Repair. Hey, welcome back. Hey, right now I'd like to tell you about one of the top 10 necrotourism destinations in the United States. I'd like to share a little bit of history, but I'd also like to tell you a little bit about my adventure there in 2019. The place that I am talking about is none other than Mount Vernon, the burial location of the first president of the United States, George Washington. George Washington died in January of 1799. And when Washington died, the Congress passed a resolution that they wanted to bury the first president in a crypt that was going to be 2 stories below the rotunda in the Capitol that was actually under construction at that time. Martha Washington thought it was a good idea, and she agreed with it as well. So while the construction was going on, Washington was placed in the family tomb, as were approximately 20 other members of the Washington family. Now, George Washington himself requested in his will that the family build a more elaborate tomb than the older tomb they had overlooking the river. As a matter of fact, to quote him, "The family vault at Mount Vernon requiring repairs and being improperly situated besides, I desire that a new one of brick and upon a larger scale may be built at the foot of what is commonly called the vineyard enclosure." And again, that was in his will. So, around 1830, it was the 100th centennial of George Washington's birthday. So, conversation was taking place again about having him buried in the rotunda of the Capitol, but again, that never happened. But another thing happened in 1830 was the Washington Vault was vandalized and broken into when these were trying to get the skull of George Washington. Yes, you heard what I said, trying to get the skull of George Washington. Well, their plan failed because they ended up with the skull of his grandfather. After that happened, the grandson of George Washington, John Washington, decided to go ahead and build the tomb, or the vault rather, that we all see now, the family vault. So the Washingtons and the rest of the family were moved to this new grand brick enclosed vault in 1831. Now the sarcophagi that the Washingtons are in now were installed in 1837 and their bodies were placed inside. Now as you approach the main vault, there are two obelisks that are enclosed by black fences. Those are actually the markers for John Washington and his wife, as I mentioned, who was the grandson of George Washington, who actually had the vault built. Now, one of the other things that's on the grounds of the Mount Vernon estate is the slave cemetery. The slave cemetery is interesting because there's several few things on that. Number one, there is a slave marker that identifies, this was done in 1929. This was a slave marker that recognized all the slaves that were buried from 1760 up until 1860 during that time period. Later on, excavations were done in that slave cemetery, and in 1983, researchers did more research and created a marker on the burial grounds. So the slave cemetery is a separate entity in of itself and needs to be checked out as well while you're on the Mount Vernon estate. Now, part of what I was mentioning about the marker that was put there for the slaves in 1929, that was done by the Mount Vernon Ladies Association. Now, they're a very important organization because once upon a time, the Washington family fell on hard times, that is, and in 1838, the Ladies Association purchased the property that is the Vernon Estate, or Vernon Manor is, had it restored, and then allows it to be what it is and operates the things that go on now. As a matter of fact, they have tours there every day of the year, a tradition that was actually started by George Washington himself, daily tours being available at Mount Vernon. Now, obviously, there's lots of things you can check out on the estate, you know, the slaves' quarters, the actual house itself. You can go on guided tours. You know, of course, knowing what I do with the necrotourism, I was more concerned with the cemeteries and the burial areas. Mount Vernon was put on the National Historic Landmark list in 1960, and it became on the National Registry of Historic Places in 1966. You know, it cost about $25 to get in, and if you are able to visit, it is definitely worth your time in a necro-tourist destination that definitely needs to be visited.
I would like to invite you all to check out a friend of mine, Tracy Rylands, who does an amazing website called Adventures in Cemetery Hopping. She has visited around the country, dozens of states, and she writes extensive articles and does photography as well. Be sure again to check out her website at adventuresincemeteryhopping.com.
The next segment we are going to do is about Native American burial mounds. And this particular one is located in Ohio. Now, actually, I visited this place in February of 2019. This is another adventure that I had with Wendy Everett from the Graveyard Gals. We headed out early in the morning. We visited Enon Cemetery. After that, we went to the Enon Adena Mound. Now, we actually traveled around and looked on it, shot some photos around it, read the information. If you like Native American mounds, it's definitely worth stopping. I was able to traverse the mound and come over the top of it. It was pretty exciting because I learned some things about that and the trees that were on top of the mound. But let me give you a little background on this. The Enon Adena Mound, also known as the Knob Prairie Mound, was built, as mentioned, by the Adena people, which existed around 800 BC up until 1000 AD. It is located in Enon, Ohio, which is in Clark County. The mound itself is about 40 feet tall. It encompasses about 1 acre of land. It has a circumference of 574 feet, and it is about 110 feet across. Now, a long time ago, it actually was the center of a horse racing track around the early 1900s. That seems a little crazy. There was actually a state fair that was held there, and the Governor's Cup at the racetrack that was there happened at the state fair, which was kind of crazy. So there's actually evidence of that right there on Meadow Lane. Now, another interesting thing about this mound, John Smith of the Mormons fame made note of the Adena Mound, or the Prairie Knob Mound, as he was traveling out west. I thought that was pretty cool. One of the craziest things, I noticed the big trees as I went across the top, and it made me wonder, and I had found out that in research that there was an apple tree that was on top of the mound that spawned what later became the annual Apple Butter Festival in Enon, Ohio.
Be sure to check out the Cemetery Podcast website at thefuneralsource.org/cemetery-podcast.
If you travel to Spring Grove Cemetery in Cincinnati, Ohio, located in Section 15, you will find a very, very impressive monument. This is a 35-foot tall monument that has three statues at the base and one statue high atop the column. The statue that is atop of the column is Moses. The three lady statues that go around the tripod base are the symbols of friendship, love, and truth, which are the IOOF motto, because this monument is for the Independent Order of the Odd Fellows. This monument was dedicated to the brothers who are buried in Spring Grove Cemetery, and it was unveiled in September 20th of 1881. It cost $25,000 to build, and it was collected through subscriptions and entertainment funds. And at the unveiling, 1,000 people were in attendance. You know, some of our friends have been working hard to bring awareness to our favorite subject, the gals in the graveyard. They're a duo of lady conservationists who enjoy a little bit of gallows humor. So be sure to join their journey. Like and subscribe by going to their website at galsinthegraveyard.com. Gals in the Graveyard, giving life to death. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I am about to tell you one of the scariest stories that you are ever going to hear if you are someone who is a necro traveler and a cemetery photographer. November 2020. The Necro Tourist, we traveled south to the Carolinas. We were spending 3 days. Day number one was going to be in Asheville, North Carolina. Day two in Charlotte. Day three in Columbia, South Carolina. So, As we arrive in Asheville, we visit all the places that we intended to visit. Day two, we arrive in the greater Charlotte area. Now, for those of you who are serious photographers, maybe you do like I do and you carry multiple cameras. I carry three. I often ping-pong back and forth based upon what the subject is, who it is, especially really important people. You know, some of the people we visited that day, like Billy Graham, I shot with multiple cameras because I sometimes get better angles, better camera shots. Anyway, so back to the point, is while we were in North Carolina, we decided to go to one of the most haunted cemeteries in the area, the Hopewell Presbyterian Cemetery. And we also went to Billy Graham's burial location, where there was also several members of his television show buried there alongside of him, and near him, rather. We then rolled on to downtown, where we picked up the Old Settlers Cemetery, which is another haunted location downtown. And we finally moved on to the really big one in downtown, or in the Charlotte area, which is the Elmwood Cemetery. This place is legendary. Couldn't wait to get there. Right beside it is the Pinewood Cemetery, and we go there as well. So we shoot all through there. We go on to our next day, which is Columbia, South Carolina. We picked up several of the big cemeteries there, and we continued to move on to wrap up our trip. Now, we decide, you know, we arrive back. This is, again, a three-day trip. We come back at the end of 4 days, or at the end of 3 days. And, you know, we have practices as soon as we get in. How we do our loading, write our stories, unload our cameras, blah, blah, blah. We start doing what we do. Now, I don't know how many of you have actual cameras or you use your phone, but we use Canon equipment and we use Fuji equipment as well. Now, some cameras, depending upon what they do, your cameras will actually group your photos by days that you shot them, or some cameras will group them by the numbers of photos you shoot, say by the thousands. Also, another factor about cameras are, some of them, while you're unloading photos, you know, batteries will die in the middle, or some are charging while the batteries are unloading. So anyway, I can't wait to get back because we have shot tremendous amounts of famous people in all three cities, and I'm looking forward to examining the photos. So I unload them. I actually unload the Canon photos, and I get them into the mainframe that we use. Then I start to unload the Fujis, which again, I mentioned before, they do by the per photos. Now, while I was in the middle of shooting the group, the camera died. So I didn't really have a problem with what happened because I knew that I unloaded group A from the Canon, I had unloaded group A from the Fuji, and I knew when I got back, when I put a new battery in, I needed to unload group number two into the mainframe and delete group one. So we began to talk about some of the things that had happened and what we'd experienced, the haunted things that we had seen, and we were looking forward to what the images were going to be that were the spooky images. Was it going to be orbs? What was it going to be? So when I got back into the battery, I put it back in and I started to unload the cameras. And then we continued to talk about the other place that we had seen where the ghosts were known to walk around in the Hopewell Presbyterian Cemetery. And then we were really excited about the ghosts that were going to be at Elmwood. So as we were going to open up the photos and look at them, suddenly there were none. 638 photos that were shot at the Hopewell Presbyterian Cemetery, one of the most haunted in North Carolina. The Billy Graham burial site. Photos gone. Elmwood Cemetery, one of the most haunted places in North Carolina. The photos were gone. What happened to the missing 638 photos?
Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, your worst fear and my worst fear. When I inserted the battery back in, instead of unloading Group 2 and deleting Group A, I deleted Group 2 and unloaded for the second time Group A. So by my own inability to have a double check system or to stop talking rather than paying attention to how I unload my cameras, I lost 638 photos from Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right, well, that just about wraps up the first episode of the Cemetery Podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it. Please give me some feedback in the comments and or some messaging, email, whatever you need to do, get a hold of us. Again, we are with the Necro Tourist. I would like to thank my partner, Charlotte Graves, who does tremendous amounts of work for the show. She did, as a matter of fact, all the research for the show. And I would like to thank Wendy Everett, who was out with me on a couple of those shoots. And I would thank all of you for joining us on the show. Be sure to join us next Thursday when we will have another edition of the show. So until next time, this is Ken Negley for the Necro Tourist and the Cemetery Podcast. I'll see you in the yard.